We're back. Top of hour three on this Tuesday. And normally we talk to Tony on Thursdays. But the news that came out yesterday that his uncle, Sam Bonita Sr., Hall of Famer, had passed away on Sunday, brings in their required visit at this time to pay tribute. And Tony, for all the listeners and for everybody around the game, deepest condolences to you and your mother and just everybody, the whole family, and all of his friends and all the people around the game who had such respect for him.
Thank you, Steve. He was my hero in racing. One of the hardest things I've done was yesterday I had to tell his older sister, my mom, that her brother had passed the night before. And, you know, he had his health issues, and it wasn't totally unexpected. But, of course, when the reality of him passing set in, and I was informed yesterday morning that he had passed the night before, I said, I just got to tell Mom. And my mom just had said the day before, we got to go up there and see them when you know, this summer, and go to the place up there and spend some time. I really miss my little brother. And they were close, very close growing up. And I was so amazed at seeing him just at my mother, who's 96, Sam was 94. I saw him at my mother when she retired at the age of 94. You know, longevity runs in the family when it comes to working. He was at her retirement party at the track when we had a party for my mom 2 years ago. And I'll never forget, because he was dealing with dementia, you know, Alzheimer's and health issues. And I walked up to him and wasn't expecting that maybe he would even know me. But we always were connected because I was a jockey and I followed in his footsteps. Maybe not as great a jockey as him, because he's a great rider, wonderful rider, Hall of Fame rider. But he looked at me, and I wasn't expecting much. He says, "You're not still riding, right?" And I thought, "Man, you're not still riding. You're like, you could have blown me over." And I'm thinking, "Man, his head's still there when it comes to our connection, him and me. I guess not just being my uncle. There was a jockey connection, and they talk about the brotherhood of jockeys. How you're always a jockey, once a jockey, doesn't matter what else you do in life, you're always a jockey, and you're connected to your brotherhood." And I thought to myself, I'm just about done. I didn't want to go into any details because everybody knows my story. But I did talk to him for a while, and he was, you know, really knowledgeable of what I was doing. And I'm thinking, man, how did he find out all this information? And the one thing I did say before he left that day, I said, "Hey, Uncle." I said, "You know what? You really had an impact on this family, not just being a great uncle and a brother and a father and, you know, and a husband." I said, "You brought this family racing, thoroughbred racing to this family. And thank you so much, because, look, we had his son rode, his other son trained and is a jocks agent. My brother worked in the office. He introduced our family to racing." And I'm thinking, that was in 1946 or so, because he rode his first race in 48. And it was an old boxing promoter that said brought him to the racetrack. And I can't think of the guy's name. He told me the guy's name. But he said, "You might not be a boxer, but you're built like a jockey." And he said, "Well, what's a jockey?" You know? He said, "What's a jockey?" He said, "They ride horses, son. They ride horses." And he says, "And you meet the physical makeup of what a jockey is, you know." And he was like built real good, maybe a little lighter than me, maybe a tiny bit taller than me, but built like a jockey in those days. And you know, in those days, you had to be light, you know. Even in 70, when I started riding, you better have the bug. You had the bug. You better be able to do 105, or you didn't ride. And then when he was a jockey starting out, you know, it was the same thing. You better be able to do 100, 102, 105, or you didn't get the bug. And so he introduced our family to racing. And, you know, he was such a good example for so many young people to follow. And, you know, even when I wasn't around him, I could go up to him on any day and say, hey, Uncle, what can you tell me about this? And he never gave me much advice when I asked him about riding. You know, oh, well, you know, you throw your cross, you take a little mane. You know, he never said nothing about riding. The one thing that he impressed upon me, and I never forgot it, he says, you know what? You win races, you lose races, you carry the winners and losers with you. He says, but there's one thing that you'll always carry with you. I doesn't care if you, wherever you're riding in the world, and it'll be your reputation. He says, you keep your nose clean and keep your reputation clean and show integrity, credibility. Make sure that you keep that reputation clean. And at the time, you know, a kid wanted, oh, I thought you were going to tell me how to leave the gate or what to do, put them on the lead, take them back. And, you know, tell me something about the leg on each side and how long to ride, how short to ride. You just keep your reputation clean. That's what you were to take care of, your reputation. And I never forgot that. And he made sure he impressed that upon me. But he made such a difference in our family. You know, nobody knew anything about racing, including him, until the fight promoter said, you're your jockey.
Amazing. So,
yeah.
And put him in the game.
How many generations later are we still in the game?
Well, and to talk about, you know, talk about his career a little bit, because, yeah, you know, he'd been retired. He'd retired, I think, in the 60s, late, mid-60s?
67 he rode, I think, his last race. He started in 48. He retired in 67. Then he went to work as an official, and very shortly after that was a steward in Jersey. And he was so well-respected from Florida to Jersey, any racetrack you walked into, you know. And, you know, and I never forget when he was in the steward stand. And I started riding in 1970, and he was a steward, I believe, by 70, in 1970. And, you know, you used to hear riders, because he never forgot he was a jockey. But, of course, you know, riders are always critical of anybody who has an authoritative position over them, you know. And I'd have guys, you know, walk up to me and say, man, your uncle, he's tough sometimes. He's just really tough. And what they should have said is, you know, your uncle doesn't buy our line of BS. And that's what they should have said. Because he never forgot. Like I put it to him this way. I said, you know, when you go into the movie room, say what happened. Don't say, I told him just like this. Don't piss in his ear and tell him it's raining outside. You know what I mean? Tell him what happened. Yeah, you know, I didn't see that horse in there. I hit this horse one too many times, and I probably came over before it, and then the jock yelled, and I took out. You know, maybe he'll give you some leeway and a warning, but don't go in there and say, oh, that jock ran up in there, and there was no room, and blah, blah, blah. Don't go in there and give him a line of crap. Go in there and just talk like you're talking to someone that did it. Because you know what? Any story you tell him, if he hasn't told it, he's heard it before. And some of them he's probably told in his riding career. He never forgot he was a jockey. And, you know, like I say, that day that I saw him, you know, and we were at my mother's retirement, he never forgot the connection that jockeys have. Because he's still connected to me. Not his Uncle Sam. He connected to me as like a fellow rider. You know, he knew everything I was doing. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. This guy's mind is pretty sharp. But he was in the latter stages. This was a couple years ago of, dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever you want to call it. And he's really going to be missed. And the hardest thing I said, like I said, was telling my mother last night. And she brought tears to my eyes. And yeah. My mother's 96, and she loved her little brother. You know what? You're a little brother. It doesn't matter what age you are. That was her little brother. And she told me stories about when, you know, she would go visiting when he had his little house in Florida and he first started riding and winning races. I think it was at Tropical, near Tropical Park. And I'm thinking, man, all the racetracks we talk about that no longer are around.
Sure.
Sam saw so many of them and rode at them. You know, he even rode in France in an international race.
He was one of two for C.V. Whitney that ran right. That rode in the Arc. Those are the first
right.
American runners in the Arc.
Yeah.
1956,
Yeah, Yeah, and you know, when I went up to Saratoga to the Thoroughbred Horseman's Hall of Fame, the Thoroughbred Hall of Fame, I took my little boy with me, and it was for that induction of My Juliet. I spoke
sure.
about My Juliet, but I took my little boy, Pete, and I got such a nice picture. We went over and saw his induction plaque into the Hall of Fame, Sam Bomidas, inducted in it. And I took a picture of my little boy standing underneath the plaque. And I said, that's Uncle Sam, you know? He says, he was a good rider, huh, Dad? he said, was he better rider than you? I said, Pete, there ain't nobody better than me.
That's just so ridiculous. You know, the horse that he...
Cosmo, I got a picture of Cosmo.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was one of his favorite horses. And, you know, I think about him riding Tosma. And Tosma was a great filly. She beat the boys. She went long. She went short. She, you know, Briardale Farm. That was Briardale Farm's horse, I believe. Briardale, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Tony and Beezy.
Tony and Beezy, yeah. And it was a Jersey connection, you know. And I thought to myself, you know what, Unc? You had a great filly, Tosma. And I thought to myself, our careers, maybe I didn't have all the notoriety and success and everything that you had because he won such fabulous races. I said, but my greatest horse I rode was a filly, too. You and I really connect to these fillies really good. I said, but the one difference is the one filly that you married, you stayed married to for 69 years. I got like two or three of them. I said, it didn't carry over to my personal life.
Well, he, you know, Tosma was, you know, champion. She was, I think she might have been a champion more than once, actually, at 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But she won, you know, she won the Beldame. She won the Arlington Classic, the
yeah.
Frisette, the Barbara Fritchie. I mean, she,
yeah.
you know, there's races that people won't even really realize that are you know, either the name has changed. She
yeah,
won
like
the Mascot.
Yeah,
well, the Mascot twice.
Yeah. I mean, they were the top, you know, I don't know how they graded things in those days or if they were even graded some of the races. But they were top races that were world renowned. They were now not just known through the country, they were known in other parts of the world, you know, the Arlington, Washington Futurity, and races like that. They were known all over the world. You know,
well,
we didn't just win those races and they were just, oh, that was just a stake race. No, they were world-renowned stake races, and that filly was amazing. And I always thought, boy, we really had some great horses to ride and, you know, had some contact with. But it's really ironic. Both of us had two great fillies to connect to our careers.
Well,
he's really going to be missed, Steve, and... He was a great loving uncle, great father, you know, great official, great jockey. He did everything with class and integrity. And the one thing that I'll never forget is he told me, carry my reputation, keep it clean and carry it any place in the world and it'll follow you if you keep it clean. And here's a man that absolutely lived by what he preached. And I really love my uncle. I really love him. I'm really going to miss him.
Do we know? I know from the obits that their arrangements weren't settled as of yesterday. Any more information?
No, and I'm waiting to get that today. And because my mom, you know, of course, I told her I'd make sure we get it today so we can make arrangements to get up there and be part of the whole thing. It's a sad but needed moment of coming together, families. And Uncle Sam, I really miss you. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I thank him, and I'm glad I told him. I thank him for what he did to our family. He gave us more than love and respect. He gave us livelihood. And he gave us some things to follow throughout life when it came to integrity, credibility. And I hope I never disappointed him.
Really nicely said, Tony. I appreciate it. I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to wait till Thursday to have this conversation, you know.
You know, and one thing, can I tell you something? The night that he passed, I was laying in bed and woke up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the day before, I got on a horse that I really didn't feel I had control of. And I was thinking of my little girl. What if I got busted up? Boy, what would it do to my little girl, me not being able to take care of her? You know, and I was thinking of my uncle in the same. This is no lie, Steve. I'm not making this up. I was thinking of my uncle, and just say you don't want to get on him. It came to me, like, so that's what Uncle Sam was done. No, I'm not getting on that horse. I came to the barn yesterday morning, and they said, get on that number one. I said, no, I don't want to get on that horse. So I didn't get on him. Now, you know, I get on other horses, but I can pick and choose. And I thought to myself, it didn't hit me till last night when I'm telling my mom. I was thinking of Uncle Sam, and he was, like, in my thoughts when I said, tell me you don't want to get on him. That, like, it came out of his mouth. Not into my brain and out of my mouth, but into my brain through his mouth. And I'm thinking, you know what? It says something for the connection you have with family. And it's more than just calling them an uncle because of being a relative. It's you're on the same wavelength. And it hit me yesterday. I told my mom. That came to me. But I did get on another one this morning and breezed in 5/8 of a mile out of the gate. Never took a deep breath. Thanks, Uncle Sam. I love you.
You're unbelievable.
Now, if you're listening now, Uncle Sam, I love you. I love you, and I really will miss you. Rest in peace.
Tony Gay, when the arrangements, you know, make sure you pass it along, and or if there's donations, anybody that the family wants made to obviously, you know, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, given Sam Jr., I imagine, is the right donation.
All right. I definitely will let you know, you know. I appreciate
Tony,
this time. I
not
love
at
you,
all.
Steve,
love you,
thank
too.
You. Love you, brother. I love
Hang
you.
Hang in, Tony. Best to your mom and to all the, you know, all the cousins and everybody involved. It's funny. Every name, every other name had a tie to the racing community.
Yeah, and, that's thanks to Uncle Sam.
Really nice. Yeah. Tony Black, everybody. Tony, next week we'll talk, and I want to get your thoughts. It gives you another weekend to watch some Monmouth, and we'll see what you think is going on and how it's working over there. All right?
All right, Steve. All right. Thank you again. Bye now.
Thanks, Tony. Tony Black, everybody, for his uncle, Sam Bonitas Sr., who had a Hall of Fame career before moving up to the steward stand and distinguishing himself on that front. And, you know, he really didn't win. He didn't win classics, but he won so many prestigious races in his career and rode for real elite, including Vanderbilt and that ilk. When you go through, you know, some of these names and some of the, you know, some of the horses I mentioned. I mean, he talked about Tasma, but rode Ballyache as well, Career Boy and Helioscope. I mean, these are historic names that are going to be less familiar to people, but. You know, a tremendous list of wins, and it's interesting. He rode and won a number of early turf races when turf racing was getting established in this country, as it happens. And when you see he won the UN. In 56, he won the Laurel Turf Cup. He won the DC International. I mean, and that is really 56, 57, 58, Round Table, you know, who really was the first important American turf horse. He kind of ushered in that that era, it seems. Well, we'll pass along more about Sam, I'm sure, and when we get the details. And when I mentioned, I was mentioning the Masquette that he won back-to-back in 64 and 65, and of course the Masquette became the Gopher Wand and was a very, I mean, it's still a nice race. The Masquette had a run where it was, you know, really elite. It attracted, you know, some of the best Phillies every year. Who else did? I'm just looking here. Who else did? Now I'm going to get curious. Sestrom for Carl Hanford and Bohemia won the test in 65. Now, let me, while we wait for Joe Clancy, who's going to join us now, let me give you the rundown on that field. And indeed, the draw was over in a blink. Eight-horse field, as expected. Bourbonic draws the rail, and, you know, not that post position means a whole bunch in this race, historically, but Bourbonic is, you know, going to trail early, certainly. Kendrick Carmouche, 15-1, second longest shot on the board. Bourbonic from the rail. Essential Quality, who is listed as the 2-1 morning line favorite. Ron Bauer, second choice, 3-1. But 2-1 on Essential Quality with Louis Saez from the 2-hole. Ron Bauer right next to him in the 3 for Johnny, 3-1. So Bourbonic, Essential Quality, Ron Bauer. Hot Rod Charlie with Flavian Pratt, 7-2, third choice from the 4. And then France Godina with Ricardo Santana Jr., longest shot, 30-1. And Known Agenda in the 6 hole with Irad, 6-1. And you heard a little bit of positive Mike Welch thoughts about Known Agenda's preparations for this from the 6 hole. Rock Your World draws the 7 with Joel Rosario, 9-2, and then Overtook with Manny Franco, 20-1. It's actually Overtook, the second longest shot. Third longest is Bourbonic at 15-1. Overtook with Manny Franco from the 8 hole, 20-1. Bourbonic, Essential Quality, Ron Bauer, Hot Rod Charlie, France Godina, Known Agenda, Rock Your World, Overtook, your field of 8. And just saw a racing office text that said that they're close to calling a final. So we're going to, that's 11:20, so we're going to have the fields assembled pretty quickly. Okay, for Saturday, and then that'll set us up for the next 3 days of preparation. And as we wait for Joe Clancy, actually, we did talk for a second there with Cherie about her opportunity and having Baroness in the Better Roses, and of course the Better Roses, the 2-day race, it ties to the Acorn. I've made a bunch of notations actually already on the Friday card, so we got a good handle on hooking all the races up. The New York, which drew a dozen, is going to be very key. Mean Mary comes back in there, and you know is not going to going to attract plenty of attention, but let me do this in order for the sake of logic. The Tremont, the 2-year-old counterpoint to the Astoria on Thursday, drew a field of 6, and Wesley Ward with Overbore, who he supplemented, which is noteworthy always. Steve Asmussen's got the West Point Little Drama. Jim Chapman shows up with a pair, actually. I'm sure they'll be primed. The stake sequence, the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, or 9th, 10th, goes with the True North, which ties to the Woody Stevens on Saturday. 7-horse field for the True North, the Grade 2, the likes of Firenze Fire and Flagstaff turns up. Big Engine, American Power, looking at bikinis for Chad and Doheny. Wicked Trick for Linda Rice and Fat Man for Ken Sweezy invades. The Bed of Roses we talked about with Cherie, that Field of Eight. I gave it to you earlier. The New York Field of 12, led by Mean Mary. Certainly Bill Mott putting in an important pair. Harvey's Lil Goyle, she shows up in here. So does Micheline for Mike Stidham and Godolphin, who also has the Mott Godolphin trainee, Antoinette, in here as well. Traipsing for Christophe Clement. This is a nice group. Magic down on the rail. Magic Attitude for Delacour and the Jacksons. And then that one, the New York hooks up with the Met. And then in the Gold Cup, the quirky 2 mile Belmont Gold Cup, which ties to the Belmont Field of Nine. And there's no Brendan Walsh. I usually look for Brendan Walsh for those mile and mile and 5/8, mile and 3/4 races. But you're going to have to make her involved with Three Diamonds, Tie to the Sea, and he's also got Conviction Trade in there as well. But Joseph O'Brien's got Baron Samedi with Johnny. I haven't looked at the PPs yet for the Gold Cup. So there's the Friday action, and we'll have the whole weekend set probably at about 3:30 today. Joe Clancy is standing by, and we say good morning to Joe.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry we didn't get to you at the top of the hour, but the passing of Tony Black's uncle, Sam Belmita Sr., I wanted to give Tony a chance to eulogize his unk, as he called him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, racing's lost a few people here in the last few weeks, and I think any time spent on those kinds of things are good.
Well, I always appreciate, you know, hearing about, you know, the historic figures, and when you start looking at the races that he won as a rider, you know, and I know most people know his name more as a racing official, as a steward, and you know, comes from that Tommy Trotter school. You know, seemingly, if you're at least a certain age, you know, that when you got interested in the game, they were the leading names in terms of officials, whether it was the racing office or steward stand or racetrack management or even broadcasting. You know, there was that elder statesman that you just, you know, you either read about as you started to get familiar with the game, and you know, the generations, the pages turn. But when you looked at some of these horses and some of the outfits he rode for and trainers he rode for, I mean, that it's a who's who of, you know, racing history.
Yeah, for sure.
Joe, we are hurtling toward the third leg of the Triple Crown, and I already sense that people are, you know, they're horrified that there's only 8 horses in the Belmont. I as somebody who's looked at a lot of press guides, they seemingly forget some of the years past where there were small fields and you know, the Derby not so much for a long time, but it's not chiseled anywhere in stone that these races are supposed to, you know, get 14 or 16 as we could run here. You can't just conjure up these kinds of horses.
No, and I mean it's a little bit of, I mean, like we just said, times change and the pages turn, you know. I mean, people train horses and own horses now to get them ready for their best effort, you know, and it's just going to be where that falls with a lot of horses. So maybe, you know, you got horses that are just on different schedules or trying to prime for different things. It's a decent Field of Eight. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, you've got horses coming out of the Derby who ran well enough to think that they're going to bounce back here when they skip the Preakness. You got Rombauer, you know, whose Preakness was really good. I don't think he's some, you know, hopeless closer that some people try to paying him into. I think he's got, you know, I think he'll handle it. I love some of the photos of him on the track at Belmont. He certainly looks sharp and happy and ready to go. You know, eight horses can put on a pretty good show too, especially when you've got horses of this caliber.
Yeah, I'm of the same mind, and you know, yeah, Ron Bauer, Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, Known Agenda, and essentially, I mean, six of the eight are, you know, and even I suppose five and a half of the eight, depending on your view of Bourbonnick, but it feels like, yeah, it feels like a little bit of a chess match out there, actually. Now that I'm looking at how they're going to start to, you know, look at who's going to head where, you know, from a pace standpoint, you would think that Joel out there with Rock Your World is you know, he's got sort of the controlling arm out there sitting from the seven hole and you know, deciding if he's just going to go to the lead period or which I guess we'll see how forward Saez goes too with Essential Quality, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Joel can make up his mind, which is the best part from out there. He can, yeah. You know, if somebody else breaks and goes, you can sit off one or two horses, and I don't think that would bother anybody. I mean, the mile and a half is funny. People, again, it goes back to you think those horses that closed in some of the other races, but it's actually, like you said, more of a chess match, I think, in terms of when to use horses' speed and, you know, whether you can control it and dictate a little bit and get away with something easy early is going to help you late, or the closers have got to figure out how close to stay, you know. So to me that part's always fun to watch. It's just sort of it becomes this who does what and who reacts to what when, you know, and that's the fun stuff of racing.
Johnny's tendency, I think I said yesterday when we were talking about Pratt moving off of a Preakness winner by prior commitment, Ron Bauer really, I think, benefits in this situation getting Johnny, who is certainly going to, I think, you know, set him up a little closer behind the speed. I mean, this is a race where you want to get your horse into a beat, and you know, you're essentially want to go around 24 and change, you know, at a very even clip, and that's what, you know, that's what has always worked historically about this race, and you know, it's why there's been horses that have, you know, have jumped up and won that, you know, that people just, you know, look down at their program because they don't, not that they don't have a style, but, you know, horses that when you hear trainers, we've all heard this in press conferences, and he never gets tired. Then bring him here and go around in 24 and 2, and you know, this is tailor made for a horse that doesn't get tired, that doesn't have to, you know, be used early or, you know, finish with a flourish. You just have to run steadily for 12 furlongs.
Yeah, or a horse that isn't necessarily dependent on some other horses doing something to help them run their best race, you know. I mean, and Michael McCarthy said it in the press conference after the Preakness. I mean, he said, I think this horse will win races as long as they write them, you know, and I don't think he has any problems thinking the horse can go a mile and a half. And I don't think he wasn't that far behind. If you look in the Preakness, I mean, he was really, you know, mid pack. He was four or five lengths behind at most, you know, and the switch to Johnny, it seems strange that, you know, a jockey like Flavian Pratt would take off from Preakness winner, but yeah, you've got a prior commitment. He sticks to it, and I'm sure picking up John Velasquez at Belmont Park, nobody in the Ron Bauer camp is too concerned. I think that's you know, that's as good a situation as you could have.
Well, and although we didn't get a chance, there was a chance that we were going to talk to Michael McCarthy today after yesterday's win in California. But, you know, his, I think people don't, you know, don't realize that his name already appears in the annals as having trained a Preakness winner.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I would.
I mean, a Belmont winner.
A Belmont winner. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't put it past any of them to get a horse like that ready. I mean, I think the Derby horses who skipped the Preakness, you know, on paper seems like they have a little bit of an advantage coming in a little fresher. You know, and you wouldn't. You know, none of them are second tier type horses when you look at Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie and. You know, people were high on Note and Agenda before the Derby, and Rock Your World kind of lost all chance at the start of the Derby. So you give those horses a little bit longer break and come in fresher. Yeah, I think they're gonna they're sitting on their better races, or should be anyway. But I don't think Ron Bauer's, you know, at a huge disadvantage. I think he didn't run in the Derby again. Probably shouldn't be too overly taxed from this. And when you listen to his trainer tell you the horse wants to run as far as the races are, as far as they'll go, you know, that would give you some confidence or some, you know, just a decent feeling coming into this, that they're not just, you know, running because they feel like they have to.
Well, the weekend itself is, and the weather is starting to look better and better and better as the days draw closer after, you know, a little bit of a frustrating Memorial Day weekend. But I will save a lot of that for after they draw this card today and the rest of it. Joe, let me utilize the back end of a discussion about the Virginia Gold Cup, too. I talked to Sean on Thursday. We had a really – did you hear Sean and Arch Kingsley?
No, but I heard plenty of people who did, so that's the good news.
they were – I had a feeling that was going to be a natural, and it certainly came off that way. But the racing, I got to tell you, with the coverage that National Steeplechase is providing, the video stream and the recap show, anybody that wants to immerse themselves and get familiar, they're gonna have access. And there were some really good stories, I thought, Joe, out of Saturday at Great Meadow.
Yeah, I mean, and you touched on it with the video coverage. When we go to a race meet like that has a course that sort of unfolds in front of you. I mean, some of the race courses, face it, go behind trees and around corners and up and down hills, and camera coverage can be a little tricky to produce for a live webcast. But the Great Meadow race course is sort of right there in front of you. You can see the whole thing. The camera works pretty good, and the racing was great. You could really see the steeplechase schedule kind of ramping up. It really started a little slowly with just timber racing, a lot of the early meets, you know, in early March when everything was still really unclear. Some of the ones down south didn't happen, or they pushed back later. You know, the Virginia Gold Cup basically running a month later than they normally would, and you just see people's barns who've been a little quiet, like Leslie Young and Carrie Bryan, coming on, you know, with horses. Maybe they didn't have timber horses or horses to run early, and it's like everybody's got horses all of a sudden now, which is a good thing, you know. And yeah, there was some good racing down there Saturday.
Let's start before we even talk the Gold Cup itself, but let's touch on the Carrie Bryan story, because the horses that she brought to the UK, they're all, you know, ready to run, and she had a big day. The Mean Queen got it started in that allowance, and this was one that, you know, we kept hearing about. Anybody following her Twitter feed, you know, she was pointing, you know, this one and Galway Kid. We could maybe talk about both of these races together, because she won the Grade Three, the David Sims, an absolute thriller against Sean and River D with Jibra Faro. And also Bedrock, who Cyril Murphy for Mr. Naylor. That was as good a race as there was anywhere in the country Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, in that race, the Sems, I mean, there's three horses separated by two necks. You know, that's the way it's supposed to work, and it's a handicap. So Bill Gallo got the weight almost exactly right. Sean would have liked a neck and maybe a little. If the race was a little longer, Jim Befaro was chipping into that lead, and maybe he'd have gotten by a Galway Kid. But you wouldn't take away any of the performance there. I mean, Galway Kid's race at Middleburg was just too bad to be true. I mean, he had run well enough, you know, working his way through his conditions and, you know, showed up at Great Meadow and delivered. I you kind of think he was a better horse than he showed a couple times, but, it, you know, again, he was sort of working his way through. He came over here as a three-year-old, you know, and worked his way through his conditions, did not run on the flat at all. I mean, he's an Irish bred and actually hadn't run at all under rules before he came here. He's now won four races over hurdles. He's just a six-year-old, you know, kind of turning into a nice horse. And that race didn't have a couple of the superstars were like Snap Decision, who's waiting for the Iroquois, but still a pretty good race. I mean, Jim Befaro's form in these stakes is always pretty steady. He always runs his race. He's kind of right there all the time, and good effort to see a young horse like Galway Kid coming along. You know, a six-year-old that just kind of keeps looking like he's getting better, and maybe he's a horse that people will, you know, you'd see this summer at Saratoga. It's interesting that Carrie didn't run him or the Mean Queen on Lasix, and the stakes at Saratoga over jumps won't have Lasix. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting variable, just like we're wrestling with on the flat, that some horses are making that decision.
It was a good afternoon for a number of sets of connections that won multiple races. Mr. Naylor had a big day, both with horses trained by Cyril Murphy and also by Kath Nielsen as well. So nice. It's always nice. Always happy to see Mr. Naylor do well. The win by Skudik has got to be brought up here, obviously, and the Virginia Gold Cup for Jack Fisher, and nice to get the 11-year-old a win like this.
Yeah, talk about races as far as he'll ride them, right? He's winning a 4-mile timber race, so we were just trying to figure out whether Rombauer and his other horses won 1.5 miles in the Belmont. They're going four miles over 23 timber fences, and you know, Skudik was supposed to be a flat horse. He was with Michael Mass. He was bred by Fitz and Edie Dixon, and you know, made five or six starts on the flat, never won, and really wasn't that competitive, and then switched to steeplechasing early as a three-year-old with Jack Fisher, who the Dixons have always had steeplechase horses sort of with Jack for a long time. Skudik won six races over hurdles. You know, I remember winning a race at Saratoga with Patty Young. He got kind of goofing off at the start and got completely left, and, you know, then came along and won the race. You know, and I just remember people at Saratoga, I didn't think that was even possible, you know, so he was a pretty nice horse of hurdles, and to see him switch, he's now on six over timber too, to see him switch like that and find kind of another, you know, another career and another lease on life, really, to extend it and be productive. You know, that's a $50,000 race that he's winning there after beginning his career, basically could not win on the flat. He ran at Saratoga, Delaware Park, Gulfstream Park, and then, you know, by the fall of his three-year-old year, was running over hurdles.
Well, at age 11, and he's a Tiz now out of Hennessy Mare, and it's an amazing win. Let me see. He's approaching $500,000 total in earnings. 12th overall, 12th, as you said, 6-6 in 45 starts, and amazing. 39 over the jumps of one ilk or another, and you know, had just got nipped by Renegade River at Willowdale.
Yeah, he kind of made a really late run that day, and you could see him sort of, it took him a while to get rolling for whatever reason, and, you know, kind of came up short. He probably would have won that again if it was another whatever, 50 yards, 100 yards, he probably would have won that race too, but he's just suited to it. I'm sure it's, you know, it's a stamina thing, and he wasn't quite a grade one horse over hurdles, you know, he never won at the, you know, the top level. He won a Nava stake. He won a couple of the other sort of undercard stakes on some of these places, but couldn't break through with the, you know, in the Turf Riders and those kinds of races. And there was some talk of him, you know, he might have been retired and was going to go fox hunting. And eventually Jack Fisher's parents own him now. And he's certainly extended his racing career with these timber races, because it really hasn't been that long, and he's put together six wins, you know. So he made his first timber start in 2019, you know, and to see him go on and do what he's done. And it's probably a little bit, it's a combination of things. I mean, he's still back in his past, has enough, you know, enough speed to win the races he won over hurdles going 2 miles, you know, that's back in there. But, you know, the Tisnow pedigree would certainly see him well in terms of any long distance race like the Virginia Gold Cup.
Were they happy with you know, they had a nice turnout? How did the day go down there?
Yeah, I think they would have rather had today's weather or yesterday's weather. You know, it was like every racing stop, it seemed like, over Memorial Day weekend on Saturday and Sunday dealt with some kind of cruddy weather, which put a damper on things a little bit, especially when you know, everybody's kind of itching to try to get out, and but there's not much you can do about that. You know, I think everybody from that side is just happy to see some spectators. They limited it where there was no kind of, you had to buy tickets in advance, and, you know, fairly far in advance, but just so they could have a handle on the crowd and whether they could manage the various. Again, it's all lightened up now, but when they're planning all this, you know, nobody really knew what the rules were going to be, so they planned it probably a little smaller than it could have been in the end. But I think the important thing was to get it to happen, get people there, and, you know, and move on to the next step, basically, with it.
Well, it really looked like a fun day. I saw, you know, there was a steady supply of social media notices coming out, and you know, this Carrie Breon is she certainly a breath of fresh air in terms of utilizing the various platforms, you know, to elevate the awareness of the chase game.
Yeah, definitely, and I think it helps with. You know, people who might not know, or people are on the edge of it a little bit. So much of our game is so much of steeplechasing is people who've been doing it their entire lives, and, you know, or their family did it or whatever. And, you know, Carrie worked for the Houghtons in Pennsylvania, then took the job with Jonathan Shepherd. And, you know, I don't think she was necessarily scheduling her training career to begin like it's begun, but Jonathan Shepherd retired, and, you know, and here she is trying to put a stable together. And I do get, the funny feedback I get from people is, man, they're really talking about so-and-so or some Carrie's. And I go, well, Carrie is, you know, that's what she does. It's okay. You know, like, I don't, they aren't, she is, but that's okay. You know, you can't argue with the results. I mean, you know, those couple of horses Saturday are both horses she picked out to bring over here in Ireland, you know, to buy for clients. You can't argue with that at all, you know, and I think she told me the other day she's got some 2-year-olds that people have sent her to, so you might see her name showing up in some flat programs around, too.
I love it. And the rest of the weekend and what lies ahead, obviously Belmont will keep us, you know, pretty occupied.
Yeah, for sure. There's basically the steeplechase side, there's two meets left. They go to Tryon, North Carolina, Saturday on Belmont Day, and then the Iroquois is at the end of June 26th. And then, obviously, people are already starting to kind of figure out what their summer thoughts are with horses and Saratoga Bound and that kind of thing. Here in Fair Hill, everything's getting, you just see it busier. Everybody's barns are full. 2-year-olds are coming in. There's some serious horses around when you think of Mystic Guide, and then his brother wins the race at Penn National in the mud the other day. So Mike Stidham's barn has got the half brothers that are graded stakes winners, and Mean Mary is ready to go again, and it's all pretty lively.
Nice, and I didn't want to overlook Delaware either. Winterthur, right, at Sunday.
Yeah, they went and had a timber meet there on Sunday. Again, it was pushed back. It's usually the day after the Gold Cup, but they usually run on Derby weekend, you know, so they push back almost a month. And it's another one that sort of is really built on tailgating and sponsor tents. And, you know, to succeed, they need people there. And they, again, got blasted by the weather, so it wasn't a very nice day to be out tailgating on Sunday. But the races went off, and I think they were thrilled to check it off that they had it, you know, coming off of last year. And it's much more of a low-key kind of they have timber racing only, and then a training flat race sort of to wrap it up. And Kerry won the training flat race with Baltimore Bucko, who you'll probably see over hurdles here in the next few weeks, I would think, too. Again, the steeplechase side, they're just, after so many meets were canceled last year and weren't able to happen, just to be able to get out on the race course is crucial and was very welcome for sure.
Yeah, we'll get the momentum back, no doubt. Joe, who's on tap? I'll talk to Tom Law on Thursday. You both, who's coming up here to Belmont?
Tom will be there for sure. I've got to be in Washington D.C. Friday for a family thing, and then I'm trying to figure out how to finagle some travel arrangements that'll get me to Long Island by Saturday. So we'll see. That's the plan. We're hustling through the Amtrak schedule.
Well, all right. So there's a good chance we'll see you, I expect, and we'll talk to Tom. Inching closer, though, I know I'm going to hear after noon. Got a call coming from Seth Merrow, and we're making the Saratoga plans for TV this year. And so I whenever the Belmont weekend arrives, people's thoughts turn to Saratoga.
That's for sure. I already hear it. I mean, just people that I cross paths with are very into it. And, you know, they up until the announcement by Naira, they somehow thought I had some serious insight on spectators and seating and things like that. But I had to tell them, no, I had no insight. So it's great to hear that fans are going to be there. We're excited for a good year of the special. Like everything, there's a little bit of uncertainty there, but I think we're excited about it. I think the race is going to be as good or better than ever. I was talking to Jeremiah Engelhart yesterday covering a race, and, you know, when you hear trainers say, man, we just can't wait to see fans in the stands again, and, you know,
yeah,
and to see everybody, you know, which is great because, again, they were able to do their jobs last year, but to hear that that fans and the people who are following the sport are that important to them too, I think is great.
No, well put. And speaking of which, for people that you know, may have missed out of last year's business opportunity, who do they get in touch with to talk about advertising in the special?
Any of us. We're all our first names at thisishorseracing.com. So it's just Joe at thisishorseracing.com or Sean or Tom. And there's some advertising information on the website. Obviously, we'd love to have you. And we think we've reached the right sort of cross-section of, you know, owners, trainers, breeders, and then fans and bettors and everybody else. The goal is to get the special in as many hands as possible every summer.
Well, it is indispensable for everybody, and of course, you know, you can see it online as well. But having it, you know, having it in hand is special itself. That's why it's the Saratoga special.
Thanks. We're out there trying. There are some strange nights, but we manage. And again, seeing people read it is probably the biggest reward. A little like when trainers say they're thrilled to see people in the stands. There's nothing better than seeing people read the paper, and we love being part of it.
Joe Clancy, everybody, and follow Joe online. And if you want to reach exactly the kind of audience that you know, that are industry tied, can't beat it. The Saratoga special. Joe, I'll see you. Look for you on Saturday.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Joe Clancy, everybody. Just a couple of minutes, 5 minutes really, to kind of close out the kind of an eclectic morning. And we got the Belmont field set, and the rest of the Saturday action will come together in the next probably 2 hours as well. I haven't seen a draw notice exactly yet, but we'll go down to the racing office. And although I, you know, people have gotten so used to the draws on Zoom, the jocks agents, and I mean, everybody's become proficient at that. You don't even have to go to the racing office anymore to watch a draw. Papo Morales standing by. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
How'd you make out? How was your weekend?
Oh, I strictly watched this weekend. I was really excited about some of those turf races, and then when they came off,
yeah,
I kind of lost a little bit of interest. But Form to Win, I was actually just going through and doing some regression analysis from that card on Lone Star yesterday, since they had weather come through, and my God, Form to Win had four of the last five winners. All you had to do was make an adjustment for a sloppy or muddy track. And including that, our Iris Rose, who won the Memorial Day Sprint at a huge price, was ranked number two. So maybe a missed opportunity. But, yeah, it's just the power of the app, being able to change the settings really quick to just look at how those horses have performed on off tracks. And that little bit of extra work makes all the difference.
You know, it's funny because I also sort of was at one point before the decision came, I was adjusting and put in yielding, because at the very least you're just curious, to see how is it going to affect the way in which the horses are ranked. And then ultimately, some the races I looked at were coming off, but still, it in some ways it was kind of a. It really was somewhat formful of a weekend. There were a couple of spots in the multis. I hit a bunch actually on Saturday at Churchill. They all were just solid. I mean, it's just $400-$500 type range, and I made the most of it. I years ago, and people have heard me say this. At one time, I used to get completely flummoxed and lose interest when the races start coming off. And I don't know when it happened. I think it might have been a Saratoga summer, and where it was particularly rainy. And I just said, let's dig in here. And I ended up, there was one day I had off the turf where I had two signers, actually. Actually, I met Tina. I was getting to know Tina at the time, and she was at the IRS window. It's part of the story. But I've changed that. I mean, between being able to look at MTOs we talk with Andy Serling about how those races get misbet so often. I mean, we had small fields in some cases. But, the opportunities are there. It don't just throw up your hands and say, I can't play.
Yeah, that's definitely true, Steve. And it's a little disappointing if you're a turf person and you really particularly like turf racing. It is a little bit disappointing, but you're right. I mean, you see the races get handicapped like they're still on the turf, which just creates value and opportunities for if you go back and make the adjustments.
Well, and formtowin.com, download a couple of free races a day, and it's there for you to augment what you see at a glance when you handicap, and the fact that you can get a handle on a race in seconds if you don't have time to do all the heavy lifting. And we've got some people using that have stopped heavy lifting. They're just using the app now and teeing off. I love it. Well, we'll look forward to Thursday. How are you looking for Thursday for Twitch?
Yeah, Thursday I'll be covering the Friday Belmont card. I actually got a head start on that late last night, so got a head start. And big week, Steve. There's going to be – you're going to have to, really select what wagers you want to hone in on, because there's going to be a plethora of options to bet this weekend.
Well, we got these 2 days, and we're going to go over those extensively tomorrow. Andy Beyer is going to join us tomorrow as well. Andy is going to discuss – what's wrong with the Triple Crown? So you can look forward to that. Sid Fernando as well, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale. I want to thank Popo, formtowin.com. Download today. Joe Clancy, Tony Black, to pay tribute to his late uncle, Sam Bermudez Sr. Cherie DeVoe with her companion visit to her visit 3 years ago. Mike Welch, Dave Grenig, and Al Ford, Mandatory Al, with his big win at Lone Star. Good luck today. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.